I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman. Hello.
Welcome back to Seriously. We've just had a lovely bank holiday weekend. Caroline, did you get up to anything particularly fun in your bank holiday weekend?
I did, and also a bit pop culture-y. I went to the Brief Encounter Museum.
Oh my god, that is so you.
I know. So it's in a place called Carnforth, which is where they filmed Brief Encounter in 1945. It's actually at the station, like it's on the platform.
Yeah.
It's in the old refreshment waiting room bit. They have a David Lean exhibition, so with photos and stuff from all of his films. If you don't know, he also directed like Oliver Twist and Dr. Zhivago and Lawrence of Arabia and, you know, big time 20th century films, as well as Brief Encounter. They've got lots of the costumes and random prop. The actual tea room for the station is still set up as if it was in Brief Encounter.
Oh my god, that's so great.
The original like metal till where you have to press the levers and all that kind of stuff.
How adorable.
Yeah, it's generally great. Also, they have a room set up like a tiny, tiny cinema with about six seats in it where you can just watch Brief Encounter. They just run it.
On a loop.
So we watched about 20 minutes of Brief Encounter somewhere in the middle. Yeah, it's really, really good and I can't recommend it highly enough.
My only understanding of Brief Encounter is through A, the History Boys, and B, that Victoria Wood sketch where she goes to the station to buy, what did she say? Like, I went to the station to buy my usual coconut and pineapple or something.
Yes, and she gets some mince pie in her eye, because the thing in Brief Encounter is that it's two people who get trains in opposite directions on the same day. She gets a bit of grit in her eye from a steam train dashing past, and he helps her. So that's why Victoria Wood like slams a mince pie in her eyes. Oh no, there's a pie in my eye.
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It works perfectly. But actually, having rewatched the film after seeing that Victoria Wood sketch again, Celia Imrie's character in the sketch is bang on.
Really?
It's almost uncanny how she says the same lines. In the film.
Oh, brilliant. That's so good.
If anyone hasn't seen that sketch, we'll link to it because
we'll put it in the show notes. We've had some emails, as usual. I've had a lovely one from Georgia here, who basically said that she is on the industry part of her degree, which I guess is like placements.
Yeah.
And so she's been a little bit lonely, so she's been listening to Seriously lots and lots. She says it's given her new things to listen to and watch in the evenings to distract her, Outlander in particular, and then she's done like a heart eyes emoji. So I'm so glad the Outlander the love is just being shared.
Incidentally, the second series of Outlander has started. I have not watched any of it, but anyone who is watching it, can you tell me if I should?
Oh my god, one thing that suggests that you probably should is that Channing Tatum and his wife Jenna Dewan's Instagrams, they've like been doing loads of Instagrams in the last couple of days of them in some like nice crumbly rural period looking place and in like nice dresses and suits, and the caption Channing Tatum but was just, "We've been watching a lot of Outlander recently."
Oh wow, okay. Because yes, the trailer for the second series, I think Jamie and Claire go to France. They possibly go to maybe the Jacobite court in exile because, yeah, basically they've made Sam Watts's face brush his hair and wear a kind of suit jacket with his kilt.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, yeah, that's the biggest recommend you could get for something like that, I think, if it comes via Channing Tatum's Instagram. Georgia also says, have you guys ever watched Green Wing? Which, yes.
Yes, I bloody love Green Wing.
We love Green Wing.
I moved house the other week and almost the first thing I did after I'd unpacked everything was watch Green Wing.
Really?
Yeah. Aww. I don't know why, but I just felt really strongly like it would be a nice thing to do on my first night in a new house.
So good that it's still in the DVD rota. So maybe we'll do that in more detail sometime soon.
Yeah, we've also had an email from Catherine who has a similar story to Georgia actually. She said, your podcast is what kept me going while I lived in Midwest America last year and needed a dose of British telly and feminism. And now this is the bit that I loved about this email. I got introduced to it by my dad, who is completely obsessed. So apparently you have a demographic in the 50-year-old Blairite man.
So, oh my god, hi Catherine's dad. Did she say his name?
No, she doesn't. So yeah, hello Catherine's dad. Thank you very much for being really good at recommending podcasts to your daughter. We really appreciate
my own dad doesn't listen to this, but I'm glad Catherine's dad does.
Also, shout out to all the Blairite men out there.
Yeah, shout. We know a lot of them. Yeah. But moving on from politics, because that's just not my bag today.
Catherine continues. She really wants to recommend Jane the Virgin. First series is on UK Netflix, a sitcom about a young woman who gets accidentally artificially inseminated.
Yeah, I really want to watch Jane the Virgin.
People have recommended it to us before. We've been meaning to, so definitely one that's on the list.
Absolutely. So today, this Tuesday, the 3rd of May, is the morning of the year for me, in that it's the morning where we can look through all the pictures from the Met Gala.
Yes, oh, I love it so much.
Which is one of my favourite activities. Have you had a look, click through the like 130 Vogue pictures or whatever?
Obviously, first thing I did when I woke up was go on the Daily Mail website and then scroll forever as I looked at pictures of people wearing really strange clothes from every conceivable angle.
Did you get like repetitive thumb stroke injury from just the constant scrolling?
It made me wish I had a laptop with a larger screen because of all the scrolling.
Any highlights, any faves?
I actually really like Kristen Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Again, kind of boring to me.
Well, they're all a bit boring. So the theme was something about the future, like
Manus ex machina or something. So basically man v machine or whatever that means.
Which everyone interpreted as wear something a bit shiny.
Yeah, it was just like a sort of vague foiled event.
Yeah, so lots and lots of people in sort of silvery things, quite sci-fi-ish inspired stuff. Mm. Lots of like cutaway bits.
Yeah, and Kristen Stewart was wearing like silver eyeshadow and some like sort of, cutaway bits and lots of jewellery.
Yeah, and then there are always the people who are just like, you know what? I'm not participating in this theme. I'm just going to look really nice.
Which is so dull. It's so miserable.
So you get people just wearing like a generically nice thing.
Yeah, like a long red dress or a long white dress.
Like Amy Schumer was just wearing a nice red dress.
Mm, yeah, I find that like, go wear that any other day of your life. Like if you want to wear a cream silk dress with a big slit up the thigh, like go to the Oscars, go to the Emmys or go wherever else. Not like these sorts of people have a shortage of red carpet events to attend. Why don't you just wear that to another one?
Whereas the Met Gala is your opportunity to wear something like made of potatoes inside out.
Yeah, 12
something.
Fascinators. Yeah. Where else are you going to get to wear 12 fascinators?
There's a really soft place in my heart for the people who really embrace that idea. So people like Lady Gaga, who, as you said in your piece, turned up wearing dressed like a sexy microchip.
She had like enormous crazy platforms on as well. And I know that people are going to be like, oh yeah, sure, crazy platforms, who cares? But like, as in, they were probably the length of her leg over again.
And she was wearing tights and a sort of, microchip style body. And that was it, really. Mm,
yeah.
Madonna, who was seen to be mostly wearing insulation tape, from what I could tell.
Yeah, she managed to cover like the entirety of her body in like black tape, except like key areas like bum, cheek, tits, like those she like left tastefully exposed, which I quite liked. Yeah, I'm all for all that.
Yeah, Claire Danes wore a dress that sort of glowed in the dark and lit up from underneath, which I thought was quite fun.
I really loved that. I think my favourite was either Solange or Lupita Nyong'o, who both wore like cool colours, cool hair. It was like outlandish and bizarre, but still like looked really good, which I think is so difficult to do, because you either like look outlandish and bizarre, like, I don't know, Kris Jenner was wearing like enormous leather devil horns, or you look like boring and tasteful. Yeah. And I like it when people somehow manage to just like get that brilliant intersection of the two, and those two both did that for me.
And I wish more people would embrace it as the crazy wear anything you like event that it should be.
Agreed. Especially the men.
Yes, like you pointed out in your piece about it, that Tom Hiddleston could have just been a man going to an event at any point after 1850.
Yeah, it's really, I get so frustrated with it. Like Orlando Bloom put a Tamagotchi on his lapel and he was the most outlandishly dressed man there, pretty much, apart from like Kanye West and, you know, other people who are more likely to do that. But yeah, men in general need to up their game. It's really boring for all of us. Come on, pull your weight. So from those men to another man, great seg. The first thing we're going to talk about today is Drake Views. Views is the latest album from Canadian rapper Drake. It's an abbreviation of Views from the Six, which references Drake's hometown of Toronto. But this album has been in the works for so long, he just managed to drop the From the Six, and now it's just Views. So that's his fourth studio album, which sees Drake continue with his distinctly insular, almost paranoid brand of rap music. So we've both been listening to that over the long weekend. Caroline, any immediate major thoughts?
No, which I think is not a good thing on having spent some time with a new album. My main takeaway from this album is that Drake is okay.
Well, it was a very Drake-y album. I think it like represents a lot of what Drake's about, which is this sort of weirdly emotional... Well, I don't want to say weirdly because a lot of rap music is emotional, but this sort of self-aware, emotional, analytical, paranoid level of emotion that is really self-referential and weird. One of my friends always says that Drake sounds like he writes all his songs while he's in the toilet in the nightclub, which I think is the best way to describe it. It's like 4 a.m. and he's absolutely miserable and he's like running over the night's events in his mind to like a weird paranoid extent because he's like had too much to drink and too much to smoke. And that's definitely what this album did, but to such an extent it was so sort of like Drake squared that it became a little bit monotonous maybe.
Yes, I think that's fair. I also felt like quite a lot of the songs were too long in the sense that by the time the first idea in the song had come back round and we were at like 4.5 minutes and there was still a minute to go, I was kind of thinking, I've heard this idea now, next one. And I think that feeling is exacerbated when, as you say, there's a lot of similarity between all the songs on the album.
Yeah, that, definitely.
You know, I think the first couple of listens could probably only have picked out maybe 2 or 3 tracks and like named them and been able to imagine what they sounded like.
Yeah, I think that's a fair appraisal. I think also it's difficult for poor Drake following Lemonade because we've just had a really burst of like extreme and amazing like emotion that is like a journey with peaks and troughs. And it's like a concept album, it's compact, it's interesting. And then to get this straight after that, it's like your brain doesn't know quite how to process it. Such a different beast, but perhaps not in the most positive way. There were some highlights for me. I mean, you were saying you really like Controller.
Right. My AI just changed. It just buzzed the front gate. I thank God you came. How many more days could I wait? I made plans with you.
I do really like that song, which has been around a bit already. Also, it sits sort of roughly in the middle of the album. And when I first got to it, I thought, okay, good, here's the kind of gear change. Sadly, doesn't then carry on at that sort of level.
I do think the middle of the album is the best bit of the album. There are a few songs sort of hanging around in the middle there.
And I also really liked Too Good, which features Rihanna.
Yeah, that's great. I like that too. I quite liked Child's Play, which has my favourite lyric, I think, on the whole album, which is, why you gotta fight with me at Cheesecake? You know I love to go there. Which is like a Cheesecake Factory in America, which is just obviously their like big dessert chain place, which I just love the idea of someone being like, babe, like not in Pizza Hut. You know it's sacrilegious to talk to me like really that in
enjoying,
Pizza Hut.
I'm really enjoying my ice cream factory. Can we not fight now?
So funny. I also really liked Views, which is like the penultimate song or something on it, because I do like Drake when he's sort of sampling and a bit more sort of melodic and emotional in that sense, because one of my favourite Drake songs of all time is Jungle, which is very like that. I think those were my highlights. I also wonder if he knows how his music translates into pop culture. He's aware of like his quote meme ability and stuff like that. I wonder if there's an extra layer of self-awareness that sort of stagnates the album a bit, because he put this album off and put it off and put it off and put it off. And in the meantime, since his last studio album, he's released 2 really punchy, spontaneous, compact little mixtapes that have done really, really well. Maybe the pressure was too much. You know, I'm being harsh because there are some really great songs on this album, but just the feel of it as a whole feels a little bit like constipated almost to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually. I was thinking about that while I was listening to it, that maybe this is the album of someone experiencing extreme self-doubt.
Maybe, yeah. You know?
And as a result, levelling everything off in a way that feels safe.
Yeah.
But isn't necessarily exciting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I'd like to hear another little mixtape from Drake next, because I think at the moment that's where his most sort of like creative stuff is coming from. And I think also Drake albums can be a bit of a slow burn, and maybe in a few weeks' time I'll look back and be like, actually that album was really good and I was being really, really unfair, but I'll sit with it for a while and...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
See how we go.
Question is, will I ever leave you? The answer is, No. Question is, will I ever leave you? The answer is no.
Yeah. You feel the pressure, man. I know the pressure. And my wifey is a spice like I'm David Beckham. A lot of pent-up aggression coming out of my section. OVO on me.
Now we're going to talk about Witless, which is a BBC Three comedy drama about two flatmates who witness a gang-related shooting and are taken into a witness protection programme in Swindon.
Hi. We'd like to register as new patients. Because we've just moved here because of with our jobs from a different area to this one.
Okay, well, let's get you on the system. Who wants to go first?
My name is Sarah Penn. I live at 39 Woodbridge Court. I work in the public sector.
Fine. Anna, can I get your NHS number?
7. 7.
Is that another 7 or...?
7.
It stars Terry Howard, who you might also have seen in the BBC Three show Him and Her, and Zoe Boyle, a.k.a. Lavinia's wife from Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well done.
Were you not just thinking that the whole time?
No,
I was like,
but
poor
now
Lavinia
you say that.
With the Spanish flu.
Yeah, yeah. She was like literally there for like an episode and then like died tragically and everyone was like, okay, great. She's done.
The Witless is in the same vein as 13, part of BBC Three's new online-only incarnation. This morning I was looking around for some articles written about Witless to read what other people have really said about it. And all I could find were lots and lots of lists from January of like exciting things coming for TV in 2016.
Right.
But no actual reviews of it.
Oh, really?
And I wondered whether people haven't quite got used to the fact that BBC Three now operates a bit like Netflix in the
where
sense
you have
that
to, like...
you have to kind of stay on top of what's coming out and write your thing at the time. Interesting that there was basically zero criticism of it to read.
Yeah.
I have watched the first 2 episodes.
I've watched the first one.
It actually, coincidentally, like 13, is also set in Bristol.
Well, it's sort of set between Bristol and Swindon, isn't it?
But it's
it?
Definitely southwest. There's quite a lot of excellent accent.
There's a little montage when they relocate as part of this witness protection thing from Bristol to Swindon and you see all the roadsides and I was like, Cirencester, Stroud. This is all where I'm from. I was like, where are they going to end up? Swindon, not the most exciting of places.
There's also, I think, an interesting twist on, you know, a fairly well done dynamic of two good female friends, something drastic happens to them, they have to cope, which is, I think there's a kind of class dimension to it.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
In that I think Kerry Howard's character, whose sort of new name is Lisa, is definitely supposed to be kind of, I think, probably less educated and a bit lower class than Zoe Boyle's character.
Yeah, there are lots of little flags about that. Like, she keeps going on about a BTEC that she's got, which, like, when I was at school, like, if you had a BTEC, it was because because you weren't like academic or middle class enough.
Yeah,
to
you
have
do them instead of GCSEs.
Yeah.
Lavinia, as I'm going to call her from Downton Abbey, keeps telling everyone that she works in the public sector and she leads a small team. And
yeah, that's one bit of her story she can remember.
And she dresses very much in a kind of middle class professional way.
Yeah, and she's desperate basically to sort of cut a cord between her and Lisa because she's fed up of her. But a lot of the things that seem to irritate her seem slightly rooted in class. Like, I don't know if that's fair to say all the time, but it definitely is an interesting portrait of like a friendship across classes anyway.
Yeah, and also not just a friendship, because we haven't sort of heard too much of their backstory as friends, but my sense is that they were flatmates first and have become friends because they've lived together for a few years.
Yeah, because there's a little line, isn't there, where Lisa's like, oh, you were my longest flatmate, you've been living with me for 2 years, 8 months, you're the longest by 2 years.
So there's a kind of sense that they wouldn't know each other if it weren't for the flat.
Definitely.
And that's how because they went to different kinds of schools, I expect, and all that kind of thing.
Contextually, the episode begins with Rona telling Leanne, oh, I'm moving out, I don't want to basically live with you anymore.
I bought somewhere, I'm going to live on my own,
and then
not with you.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously that sort of like cosmic joke of the show is that just as she was about to sever ties with Leanne, they're forced together as part of this witness protection program. So they're like trying to come to terms with A, continuing to live together, and B, living together with completely new identities and like no money in a completely different place. And
not being able to go to work and all the
and
rest of it.
And trying not to get shot by the gang members who basically want them dead.
Yeah, so the gang members are really interesting because on the one hand, they look completely unthreatening.
Mm.
And because they both look like they're about 12 and they're very sort of almost stylized and caricature in that like white rude boy way.
They're like gelled hair, Bristolian accents revved up to the max.
But even in the first episode, they've already managed to work out where Leanne and Rona live, and they've gone round there and killed their neighbour. So they are the baddies, but they're not, like, I definitely don't hate them or anything like that. I'm interested in their story, and I'm interested in the kind of contrast between their total incompetence and apparent quite efficiency.
They're the other big source of humour. Like, their dynamic with each other and their stupidity is one of the big sources of humour in this show, as much as Rona and Leanne's relationship is.
There's a scene in the second episode, which I don't want to spoil for anyone because it is excellent, that made me just laugh out loud a lot, which is to do with the younger of the two boys doing some like online fraud, which is very, very funny, particularly for kind of generational differences in the way people type on the internet and stuff, because you see like a text or like messenger conversation flashing up between a younger person and like someone 30 years older, and the older person keeps putting like "regards Tony" at the end of all his messages.
I love it. Yeah, there's a fun technological element in this program in general. Like, I like the way that it's littered with these little sort of like cultural and technological things that really place it for you in time and space. So there's like, they get given a video in the first episode to watch, which is like meant to be an introduction into the witness protection program, but it's clearly like about 15 years too old and it's really dated, and it stars John Inverdale.
Yeah, who does, you know, he does like Countryfile and Crime Watch and stuff like that, you know. He's a really like bread and butter BBC factual TV presenter. I think it wasn't he on Blue Peter as a younger man or something?
I don't know, like, but he's just got that sort of like familiar face, and you're like, oh, I've seen you everywhere. That video is really funnily done. It made me laugh so much, and it's sort of like cut, the whole episode is sort of cuts between that and the...
Yeah, so as Leanne and Rona kind of encounter various problems with their new status in the witness protection programme, you get a little bit of the John Inverdale video dealing with don't have sex with people. Or
like this, on your first day, you should go to the dentist or whatever. I loved that one of the main plot points revolves around Leanne not wanting to let go of her Boots Advantage card.
Yes.
Which is so like good. Absolutely how I would feel as well. And then she's like, okay, I'll cut up my card, but you owe me 8 meal deals.
There's 2,000 points on it.
Which I love so much. There's just lots of little bits like that where you're like, oh, it feels really like human and sort of now and very relatable. It's also got a weirdness to it that I really enjoy.
Yes, I totally agree. I think a less good programme would be a lot more literal.
Yeah, definitely.
About this, whereas, yeah, there's a kind of hovering on the edge of surreality at all times with this that I really like.
Mm. I think continuing in our tradition of identifying history boys in random TV shows, this stars history boy Crowther.
It does, yep.
Who's also, you might know, as Danny Pink from Doctor Who. And anyway, he's handsome as ever. And in this, as sort of like someone that Leanne sort of sleeps with regrettably.
I think the character I've seen him play in the last few things he's been in, which is like incidental handsome man.
Yeah, in Gavin and Stacey, they call him Fingus.
Oh, yeah.
And Gavin's mum, Pam, is always like, feels wrong calling a grown man Fingers. But yeah, he's great. And yeah, I found it really fun, and I actually think it's something that I'll like watch maybe on my, like, it's difficult because we're seriously, there's so much stuff that we're like, oh yeah, I'll probably keep on watching that, and then a lot of the time I don't. But I feel like this might be quite good as a like a lunch break style thing.
Yeah, they're only half an hour, the episodes, as well. And for better or worse, it's always easier, I find, to keep up with stuff that's on iPlayer just because it's more accessible.
Definitely. And there's just something, I don't know what it is in me, but when something's British and like very relatable, I'm more likely to watch that than something that I might like more that isn't. So like,
yeah,
I used to watch,
mean.
Did you watch the, like, what's it called when you go into a lottery as a group?
The Syndicate.
The Syndicate, yeah. Mm. I always used to watch The Syndicate with, like, lunch. I don't know why. It just felt so accessible.
No, I know what you mean. Like, of all the things we've done on the podcast recently that I've meant to keep up with, Jessica Jones is one I really wanted to keep watching. Really enjoyed it. Found it so interesting. It's on Netflix. I'm still only 7 episodes into the 13-show series because for some reason, I don't think I can watch it while I'm eating or doing something else.
Yeah, which you want to concentrate on it.
Which is mostly how I do my non-seriously TV watching.
Yeah.
Whereas I would feel no compunction about like eating a sandwich while I watch Witless.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Our brains are weird.
Is it because I don't want to eat in front of Americans? Like, what is it?
I don't know. It just feels more like at home. So you're like, yeah, I can watch this in my pants. I don't know. But yeah, I agree. I think this, therefore, might be something that I just like keep going with in that sense because it's really, really good. So do give it a watch.
So last episode, I recommended that Anna watch the first ever episode of The West Wing, which I think is just called Pilot, and that she accompany this with the first episode of the West Wing Weekly podcast.
Yeah, that was a really great way to do it.
I'm glad that worked out because I've been very slowly rewatching The West Wing to keep up with the podcast because I really, really like it. And I haven't done a proper rewatch since it was on. So it's good to have an excuse. And I've really, really enjoyed the experience of seeing it again with their commentary. So I thought you would as well.
I'm almost jealous of them with their format that they get to just do like one episode at a time, really contained like that, because it's such a fun way to like really get into the detail of stuff. So they like talked about all the 6 different plots that happen in that first episode, which I guess we're sort of going to do now in like a meta way. So I'd never seen The West Wing before.
Were you aware of any of its kind of cultural heritage in any way?
Well, I thought not. And then I watched it and I was like, ah, okay, there are certain things that I know because of this show that I didn't know that I knew.
Which I think is always the mark of a show that had a real impact.
It was really interesting for that reason. And it's also interesting as like a time capsule. And I obviously, as someone who was not like an adult in 1999 or whenever this pilot is from, I have no idea, you know, how realistic it is. Certainly I have no idea how realistic it is in the sphere of Washington politics, especially. But it's really funny seeing plots that revolve around the use of pagers and like these men wandering around in suits that they're literally drowning in. Why are all the suits so oversized? It's like really bizarre. And yeah, like just enormous cell phones.
Yeah.
Huge. It's really funny to me for that reason. One of the first major reveals in the episode is there's this whole plot where people are talking about this guy POTUS and no one knows who he is, and like you're meant to be like, is that your mate POTUS? And obviously watching it, I'm like, why is everyone acting like POTUS isn't a perfectly common piece of parlance? Do you know what I mean? Everyone hears POTUS and uses POTUS. Barack Obama's Twitter handle is @POTUS. Like, we know what it means.
That, well, the show kind of popularized
exactly. That must
this
be
this is the thing
how it works.
Yeah,
because there's this moment where she's like, oh yeah, your friend POTUS paged you, and he's like, dun dun. that's the president of the United States. And you're meant to be like, oh, shit. But obviously you're just like, yeah, no, duh.
Also, it was interesting for me rewatching it, having not seen the very beginning of series one since the first time I watched the beginning of series one, but having obviously seen later episodes far more recently, and seeing how, like, how little Martin Sheen is in it, for instance.
Right, he sort of pops up in these big schmaltzy moments where it's like, ah, oh, the president. Like, you want to get out your little flag and, like, wave it every time he comes on screen.
With the clothes on their back, they came through a storm. And the ones that didn't die want a better life than they want it here. Talk about impressive. My point is this. Break's over.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir.
Which I found really weird. I think in general, I found this tonally utterly bizarre as a programme. And I don't know whether how, I mean, presumably The West Wing was hugely influential and it has influenced the tone of later big political dramas. And on a surface level, this is a really cynical show. Like, the president tells someone to get their fat ass out of the room. Like, there's a whole plot line revolving around a snarky remark that someone's made on TV, this guy Josh Nyman. And there's lots of walk and talk, you know, very Aaron Sorkin, very, very quick-paced dialogue that is very sort of cynical and edgy and snarky. But underneath that, the tone of this programme is incredibly schmaltzy and, idealistic, which is just something you don't really see in the... Like, I'm thinking of, you know, like, I don't know, House of Cards and Scandal and The Thick of It and all these programmes now. They're not, like, you don't have a scene at the end where the president gives an emotional speech and everyone's like... Politics still has good people. Like, it's really weird and it's sometimes a bit jarring.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that I really like about it, in the sense that it operates in a kind of fantasy world where the people in government still think that they can change things for the better.
Yeah, and they're all, like, very, very idealistic people.
Yeah.
And it's really, like...
So a good example of this is that it's a major plot point, I think at the end of the first series, beginning of the second, where... Martin Sheen's character is trying to decide if he's even going to run for a second term.
Right.
Because he's like,
this
well...
This is his first term.
This is his first term, you know, I got into politics to change some things, like, I've got some of the things I want done. You know, would it not be a personally motivated, selfish decision to try and hold on to this power for another 4 years?
Mm.
That's the decision he's trying to make. Whereas obviously most presidents are like, hell yeah, I'll do this for,
right.
for twice as long. It's great, you know?
Yeah. So that whole side of it, I was like, wow, that's dated, I think.
Yeah.
I think now we don't expect that from our political
programming. I think it is dated, but it's also very Sorkin-y.
Mm, yeah, sure.
I think Aaron Sorkin is still capable in 2016 of writing a show with a sort of a strand of naive idealism that you wouldn't get anywhere else. Like, even in something like The Social Network, which is, in a sense, quite a dark film.
Mm.
You still get that kind of sense of like, well, Mark Zuckerberg thought he was doing a good thing.
It was funny how much some stuff is dated and how other stuff feels fairly relevant still. Like, there's a whole strand in this episode about a religious group and they come in because they want this guy Josh Lyman to apologise for his aforementioned snarky TV comment. It gets quite aggressive, this conversation, even if it's surface level polite, and then there's like some very subtle language thrown around that seems pretty anti-Semitic.
Mm.
And that is something that, like, obviously in British politics in the last couple of weeks has been a huge issue. But again, it was dealt with very idealistically in that the president comes in and just, like, backs this Jewish guy completely and, like, is just like, get out of my office to these people.
Yeah, there's no sense that it's part of a wider culture or anything like that.
And the ultimate conclusion is that the authority and the government are on the right side.
Yeah.
And the ultimate conclusion is, like, there's not really any problems in government as a whole, which
That's something that they bring out, I think, really well in subsequent editions of the West Wing Weekly podcast, where they say it's a really interesting drama concept to have the establishment as the good guys.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
But that is the fundamental thing you have to accept about the West Wing from the outset, is that they are the good guys.
Right. Yeah, that's probably what I struggle with a little bit.
Let's go on to the important things, obviously. Which was your favourite hairstyle?
My favourite hairstyle? Well, I think the best hairstyle was Cuddy from House.
Yeah.
Who plays, like, a sex worker who sleeps with handsome man Rob Lowe. And then
Sam Seaborn.
I was quite shocked and impressed by, like, Alison Janney's hairstyle. Mm. And what's the character's name? The one who's, like, speeding and on the phone.
Mandy.
Yeah, Mandy's
hers is my favourite hair.
Yeah, her, like, short, 90s crop thing she's got going on is like very interesting. So how long did this show go on for?
7 series.
Okay, I can't guarantee I'm going to watch all of
24
those.
Episodes each.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I was impressed by the pilot as a whole. I think it was like a very compact, like there was so much going on. So much going on to the point I was like constantly confused. But I guess that's what Aaron Sorkin wants from me.
Yeah, they do simplify it a bit. I think probably one of the bits of feedback they did get from the pilot was, okay, that was a lot going on, guys.
It is a lot. But an education in the West Wing for me this week. So that was entertaining. So for you next week, I thought I'd give you another film that is very close to my heart from my childhood. So you're not allowed to be mean about it, okay? Which is another Johnny Depp film, maybe noticing a trend. But it's brilliant. It's so good. And this is John Waters' Crybaby, which is a sort of parody spoof 50s musical. And it really ramps up the camp to a really hilarious level. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's like set in a 1950s high school, and Johnny Depp's the kind of bad boy who comes in and disrupts everything. So it's just a roller coaster ride of pure fun and joy, and it's got its tongue in its cheek very firmly, and I think you'll like it.
I can't wait.
Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to Seriously. All you have to do is search SRSLY in iTunes or any other podcasting app you use. While you're there, it would be really great if you could leave us an iTunes review, as it helps other people find the show.
We also rely on you listeners for your recommendations. So if you want to tell us what you thought about something, or if you've got something we should watch, you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, via email. All the details are on seriouslypodcast.com. If you like, you can also recommend us to your friends, family, neighbours, strangers. Let them know that you like the podcast and that they should be listening to it too.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.